the last word
with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.
During the clock on, podcaster, broadcaster and fiddle player, you're very welcome to the Culture Club on The Last Word. And of course, I do want to talk to you about Halta Gael, because our good friend here in Today FM, our own presenter Louise Cantillon, is one of those with you on Halta Gael. For those not familiar with it, tell us about it.
Well, thanks very much, Matt, for having me. I'm delighted to be here. But yeah, Halta Gael is a bilingual podcast. So we meander idir Biarla agus Gaeilge. And I suppose the whole notion of it is that we are trying to, you know, maybe make the Irish language a little bit more intimidating for people who are interested in it. But it's very much just three women shooting the breeze, talking about things that are relevant to our own lives. And it just happens that we communicate with each other primarily as Gaeilge in the real world.
So if you were talking to each other, say, in the green room before going on stage, and I'll get to your tour in a minute, would you be discussing things as Gaeilge without using any English?
Oh yeah, big time. Big time, definitely, yeah. Yeah, and then I know, and then it kind of seems a bit counterproductive then that we go into Biarla for the podcast, but it's that's our primary language of communication with each other is Gaeilge.
And how much then do you use, well, how easy do you find it to move between Irish and English in a conversation? And how easy do you reckon is it for the audience to follow that?
Well, you know, I actually find it very difficult to meander in and out. I tend to stick to one language if I'm going speaking it, and then I find it very hard to go in and out and in and out. I find that my fluency isn't as good as Biarla, especially when I'm in situations like this now and on live radio. If I'm grasping for a word, the Irish word will always come to me quicker than the English language word. But I think, you know, for the podcast, it's primarily in English, I suppose, and then, you know, maybe 30 to 40% Gaeilge, and it's very much kind of sewn in to the conversation, so it's really accessible for people to pick up. People don't even really realise that we're switching between languages. You know, a lot of it is you can pick up the meaning as well in the context of the conversation if you're not 100% familiar with the exact sentence.
And tell us about bringing it on tour to the United States.
I know, it's mad. We're on the eve of our American and Canadian tour, where you're dumbfounded and very, very excited. We have a show in Belfast on Saturday night, and then we fly out to Canada first thing Sunday morning. So we have a show in Vancouver and then in Boston later in the week, and finishing up in New York City. So it's mad.
And who's this all for, the shows in the United States and Canada? Who's going to be at them?
It's wild. We have a huge listenership in North America, which is bananas. But I suppose a lot of the diaspora, we have a lot of the diaspora tuning in, but also, you know, learning Irish is a huge thing with Americans. I get reports of loads of Americans that are undertaking Irish language classes in Manhattan and Boston, and they're mad into it. So there you go. I know, it's mad. Like, we have, I suppose, such a mad relationship with the Irish language at home, with the education system, you know, and then there's people over in America that are just crying out and spending big money on becoming fluent in the language.
You're not from a Gaeltacht region, are you?
I'm not, but my family are, and I'm a native Irish speaker. I was brought up in the Irish language, and I'm very proud of my Gaeltacht connections. My family come from a Gaeltacht called Muscree, a place called Cooley in Gaeltacht Muscree.
Down in West Cork.
You haven't now, Matt. Very late yet.
I'm from Cork myself.
Oh, of course, I know that. Of course, yeah.
But growing up in Dublin, how much opportunity, though? Presumably at home, you're talking as Gaeilge. Mm. But when you get outside of the house, how much opportunity did you have?
Matt, I'll tell you the truth now. I have done a degree, a master's and a PhD, and I've never done a day's education in English. All my education has all been through Irish. Until very recently, I'd never done a day's work in English. I'm 31 years of age now, and it's only in the last year that I've started working through in the English language. My whole day is as Gaeilge. All of it is. So I know.
No shortage of opportunity to do that.
No, I would say that there is 10 times the opportunities for Irish language speakers than there are. Well, especially in media, because people are crying out for people that are fluent in Irish. But I mean, in loads of other sectors as well, education, law, legislation, and there's loads of opportunities for Irish language speakers. And I mean, just the best kind of, you know, great jobs and chances to go and travel the world boiled, and yeah, it's brilliant.
I have to give you the same apology I gave to Louise when she was doing the Culture Club. Mm-hmm. I cannot speak to you in Irish, unfortunately.
That's all right, I'll forgive you.
Okay, thank you. It's going to be entirely conducted off Spirla, this particular interview.
Okay.
So, let's go to the first single that you can remember actually purchasing. What is it?
My first single. So when I was 13 years of age, I remember my father brought me into Clatter Records in town and he bought me a few albums. My father is a fiddle player. I learnt all my music at home from him. And amongst the albums he bought me was an album by a man named Sean Keane, who was in the Chieftains in Kiltory, Chulainn, and was a great friend of mine and a hero of mine. And I'll always remember getting his album as kind of one of the seminal moments of my, you know, musical life, because it just got me on the hook. So I think we're going to play a track from Sean Keane now called The Piper's Despair. He was from Dublin City Centre. He died last year, and you know, any traditional musician will tell you about the enormous input that he had in, I suppose, the evolvement of traditional music, but also on how we now view traditional fiddle music. Like, he changed the sound of Irish traditional music on the fiddle. Well, I suppose he was incredibly competent. Like, he had great mastery and ability on the instrument, first of all, but then he had great musicality and artistry as well, in the way that he could shape a tune, and he had great understanding of the tradition. You know, he could, you know, outplay anybody on the board of the fiddle, but then he also had a vast knowledge on, you know, regional music, especially in Clare. He had a great understanding of Clare music and you know, very old players like Patrick Kelly, and he had a very vast repertoire. And at that time, you know, that wasn't really a very common thing of musicians to have such a deep knowledge of, you know, the I suppose the colloquial and regional aspect of the music, as well as to be so technically competent. And I think he was kind of maybe one of the first fiddle players to come along and do that. And, you know, he kind of set the bar very high for the rest of us.
The Piper's Despair. Really silly question. Don't give out to me for asking this. I'm sure there'll be listeners who give out. But what's the difference between a fiddle and a violin?
I'm glad you asked, Matt. This is one of my favourite. This is one of my favourite questions, being a fiddle player myself. And the party answer is that a fiddle player is better looking than a violin player. But no, they're essentially the same thing.
Is it just the fiddle's played a lot faster?
No, it's not. It's actually, I suppose it's just that a fiddle is what we call it in folk music and traditional music, but it's the same instrument.
It's the same instrument,
yeah, same instrument. Yeah. Yeah,
so but you get a very different sound out of it, don't you?
Yeah, you would do. I suppose classical violinists would be trained in a certain way, and oh my God, the technical ability they have is unbelievable. And I suppose as a
or is that looser and more fun, perhaps, the way the fiddle player does it?
Yeah, I think it's a bit looser. I don't want to say, you know, I suppose maybe the technical side of it isn't as important as it would be in classical music, but I think that the skill is, you know, obviously just as impressive. I suppose folk music lends, you can express your kind of artistic interpretation of music in what I would probably perceive as much in a much freer way, because obviously that's the music that I've been reared on. And, you know, there's a lot more kind of rules with classical music, of course, is expression in a different way.
See, I also think of it as also a rather sedate setting for it, whereas at least with the folk music and the fiddle, okay, maybe it's associated with the Irish pub. It's not always, because it could be in a concert venue or whatever, but it's a bit more like a bit more life to it, perhaps.
Oh, totally, totally. And, you know, I think somebody who really bridged that gap now is Sean Keane, because it's very difficult to be a very highly trained violinist and then to be able to free yourself up and to get that flow in folk music. There's a very small number of extremely competent violinists that can do that. I could probably name them all on my one hand, but Sean Keane was, I suppose, one of the first to come along to be able to excel at classical music and also folk and traditional music.
Okay, favourite album? You've gone for a Paul Brady album, Welcome Here, Kind Stranger.
Yeah, I have.
Paul has done the Culture Club as well.
Oh, has he? I'll must go back and listen to his segment of it. But yeah, I remember listening to this album like as a very, very young child in the car coming home from Coudé on those very like long trips, and it'd be really dark and you'd be, you know, kind of falling asleep. One of my earliest memories, being in the backseat with the car, my parents driving, and I know it's probably one of those easy listening albums for children to listen to. And then I remember Paul Brady re-released it as a CD, nearly 20 years ago, I'd say. And Daddy and the Nullug brought that for me one Christmas. And I always think it was the best Christmas present I ever got. I wore it out listening to it so much, and I still listen to it all the time. It's just, again, a really seminal folk music track or album that I think changed the face of folk music in Ireland. That's fantastic. So raw.
Let's hear from the Lakes of Pontchartrain. There's two Paul Bradys, really, aren't there? There's the sort of the folk music Paul Brady, and then there's the pop music Paul Brady.
I'm firmly in the folk music Paul Brady camp. He's deadly. I love all his music, but I just don't think that you can beat that era of folk music. Him, especially, you know, when Paul Brady and Andy Irvine and, you know, we're all at their best. There was just no beating it.
So then, favourite band or artist? You've given us two. You've given us one traditional and one contemporary. We'll get to the contemporary in a second. But for traditional, you're going for another fiddle player, Tommy Potts.
Tommy Potts, there you go. See, I'm a Dublin woman. I'm championing all the Dublin fiddle players. I think Tommy Potts, you know, I can't think of anybody who has influenced me or the sound of Dublin more than Tommy Potts. He was a fireman. He came from the Liberties, as did Sean Keane. And he actually witnessed an awful accident when he was in the fire brigade, and a friend of his died when they went to put out a fire. They're called out. And that really scarred him and stayed with him. And he, I suppose, expressed a lot of his grief through his music. And I can't think of any artist who brings you on as wild a journey as Tommy Potts does through his music. He merges classical, you know, European art music with traditional music and with samba and everything in between, and manages to make it sound incredibly you know, traditional and loyal to the tradition from which he draws, but also, you know, brings it to spaces that it's never been before and hasn't been since, you know.
For contemporary artists, you've gone for Fontaines DC.
I could not. They're great. They are world domination. I went to see them in Brooklyn in October of 2024, and I couldn't get over it. They're just, I mean, I suppose, again, as a dub, God, all my creative or my artistic choices are very influenced by
Dublin.
Are
you sure your parents are from Cork?
I know. But well, my father's from Dublin, only my mother's from Cork. Right. So there you go, that explains it. But no, they'd make you so proud to be a dub. You know, the lyrics in the songs and, you know, all this, the issues that they sing about. And God, to see them, you know, have such success worldwide is amazing.
Let's hear a little bit of Starbuster. Starburster, Fontaines DC. You mentioned you saw them live. We asked for the best gig and you've given us two.
Mm-hmm.
So tell us first of all about Kneecap.
Yeah, do you know what? It's mad. I suppose I've been following the Kneecap lads since, you know, before they got big, and to see them go from, you know, small gigs at Rachtas na Sauna or, you know, the Cabaret Crackerod to now to... They've just announced their second Tree Arena date. It's mad. And again, just fantastic artists. Everything that they sing about and stand for, you know, I believe in wholeheartedly. And they're great ambassadors, I think, for our generation.
And then what about Damien Dempsey?
Oh, God, Damien Dempsey, the pride of Dublin. I don't know, he's, you know, every year all my group of friends, you know, since we were kids, go to the Damien Dempsey Christmas gigs. And it's like it's a spiritual experience, honest to God. Have you ever been to them?
No.
You must go now next year, Matt. I'm telling you, I've never seen a performance like it. He's unbelievable. And at the end of it, you know, his famous song, Love Yourself Today, he ends with that and he leaves the stage and he is all of Vicar Street singing for 10, 15 minutes after, throwing their arms around each other and, you know, giving each other kisses on the cheek and everything, shouting Love Yourself Today. And it's just, it's a magic gig to be a part of, but also to leave afterwards. You know, there's a great ambience and feeling amongst the crowd.
I don't have that track. It's a different one I've got live at Vicar Street.
All his tracks are brilliant. All his tracks are amazing.
We've got Party On.
Mm-hmm.
To favourite movie, actor or director, and you've gone for all of Ken Loach's movies.
I know, there you go. I couldn't pick one. I love Ken Loach's work. It's quite heavy, you know. I do like to relax. It's not all doom and gloom. I do like to relax to, like, you know, some of Nora Ephron's stuff or some stuff that's kind of, you know, frivolous and more lighthearted and entertaining. But if we're talking about artistic merit and, you know, films that stay with you, I think Ken Loach is the man. He's great.
Okay, well, we'll actually play a clip from The Wind That Shakes the Barley, where Damien O'Donovan, played by some fella called Killian Murphy, gets into an argument with Father Dennis, played by Dennis Conway.
Let me remind those of you who have forgotten of the pastoral letter signed by Cardinal Logue and other bishops. Anti-treatyite irregulars have, and I quote, wrecked Ireland from end to end. And all those who participate in such crimes are guilty of the gravest sins and may not be absolved in confession nor admitted to Holy Communion. In other words, excommunication. And this opinion of the treaty is not just the opinion of the Catholic Church. It is the opinion of other churches. And it is the opinion of every newspaper up and down and the length and breadth of this country. But most importantly, this treaty was ratified, overwhelmingly ratified, by the people in their democratic expression in the June election.
Can you tell me, Father, how there can be a fair election in this country when the most powerful country in the world threatens war? This is not the will of the people, it is the fear of the people.
How dare you talk to me in the house of God? Silence! Damien O'Donovan, you're a disgrace to the memory of your parents. Yes, get out!
Strong stuff.
Oh my God, it is. You kind of forget, really, how hard-hitting the dialogue was in Wind That Shakes the Barley.
Yeah, I must go back and look at that again. It's many years since I last saw it, or since Ken Loach was in here for interview. Okay, and a favourite play or a musical, theatre show, what have you gone for?
I went for The Plough and the Stars. I love all of Sean O'Casey's stuff. I'm a big fan of the kind of literature that was born out of the Cultural Revolution at the turn of the last century. And I mentioned before, I did a PhD study and a lot of it kind of it relates to the cultural impact that the revival had on the Irish language and the oral poetry tradition.
Did O'Casey ever write in Irish?
No, I don't think so. Oh, God, you're caught me on the hop now. Not that I know of, or not that I
just
can think of now.
Just struck me as we were talking about it,
No, well, I'm only familiar with his English language work. But I suppose, again, like that little triangle of Dublin, I'm coming across now like I just am so Dublin-centric. I'm not, where the Abbey Theatre is there and, you know, the Sean O'Casey was there beside it. There's a great book
there. I bet you
now.
You go to the Piper's Corner as well after every match in Grove Park.
There you go. I was just about to say the Piper's Corner now is a favourite haunt of mine. There's great music there.
Sean Potts would be delighted we mentioned it.
Absolutely. Well, it's a great pub. And do you know what? Not many pubs you can say this. I think it's probably the only pub you could say this about in Dublin. You can go in and do all your business. Ask Gaelge and all of the barman will serve you and you do all your chno tree Gaelge, which is a great thing. So it's a great house for GAA and music in the Irish language.
Okay, I know it as well. But anyway, tell us a little bit, though, about The Plough and the Stars. Why this particular play?
Well, I said I'd have to go with The Plough and the Stars because I have The Plough and the Stars tattooed on my arm, The Starry Plough. But I have great memories of this play when the in 2016, when the Abbey ran a kind of a centenary programme, staging all of the kind of important plays from that period. This play went on and it was a big family affair. We all went in to see it. And I just think that it gave a great, I suppose, perspective on such an important period in our own history. And it all, again, came from, you know, the human experience, just the regular people of Dublin and how events in 1916 impacted them.
We have a clip where Peter Flusser and the Covey are discussing Nora's mental health after she suffered a stillbirth.
You're the intruder. It's like a lot out of Nora. She'll never be the same. My doctor thinks she'll never be the same. Thinks she'll be a little touched here. She's rambling a lot. Thinking she's out in the country with Jack. Or getting his dinner ready for him before he comes home. Or yelling for her kitty. All that done would be the chloroform she got. I don't know what we'd have done, only for old Bessie. Up with her for the past 3 nights, hand running.
I always knew there was never anything really derogatory wrong with poor old Bessie.
Hey, hold on there, don't be so damn quick, that's my trick.
What's your trick? It's my trick, man.
How is it your trick?
Didn't I lead the tooth?
You must be getting blind, man, don't you see the ace?
You want to waken her again, honey, when she's just gone asleep. If she wakes, will you come and mind her? If I hear a whisper out of one of you again, I'll got you.
Plowing the Stars, Seanan Casey. Favourite book or author? You've given us two. Mm-hmm. First of all, tell me about why you love John McGahern's That They May Face the Rising Sun.
I honestly don't think I've ever read anything like McGahern's That They May Face the Rising Sun, in the sense that it just changed my brain chemistry. It's the most beautiful, stunning book. There's no plot per se, nothing really happens, but every page was just a joy to read. It was a real kind of meditation on life in rural Ireland at a certain time that, you know, we may see whispers of now, but, you know, I think that we can all sense is dying out massively. And, you know, I don't think the discrepancies between our life in, you know, the cities and rural Ireland has ever been as large as what's going on now. I know that there are people in the west of Ireland and all over Ireland that are still without electricity. I saw friends of mine there in Connemara were putting up posts saying, you know, I'm listening to talk on the national radio now about people saying in Dublin, oh, we'd love the snow that they're talking about now. Wouldn't it be lovely to have it? And, you know, that they're out bringing milk and messages to people in their 70s and 80s that are now how many days without electricity. So I think it's a really important book in the sense that it kind of reminds us all, you know, of the importance of community, of connection, of friendship and looking after each other.
You also nominated Michael McGee's Close to Home. Not familiar with this one. Tell me about it.
Oh my God, this is like one of the best books I have ever read. Michael McGee, he's a young author from West Belfast, and he did a PhD in creative writing, and he produced this novel as part of his PhD work. If I can give anybody a recommendation, it is you can listen to audiobooks now on Spotify, and Michael McGee actually narrates his own audiobook, and it is a fantastic listen. It's about a young fella who's just finished college, and actually I think he's around the same age as me, finished college around 2015-2016, and it's all about, I suppose, the social challenges that communities still face in the north, and it's something that, you know, we can be quite ignorant to down here, and it's a really inspiring book, and you know, just goes to show the importance of education, which I believe in massively myself.
Well, we have a short extract from the opening of Close to Home by Michael McGee.
The window above the bed was open and the breeze wafted through cold. I stripped down to my boxers and climbed under the covers, but stayed on the outside so I could creep into my own bed as soon as Ryan passed out. The wall was black with mould and it made the room smell damp. There were clothes all over the place, takeaway cartons, cups and glasses and empty cans. Ryan smoked too much weed, that's what it was. It made him lazy. He was sinking into it nicely and he had his favourite film on, The Shawshank Redemption. He made me watch it every time we ended up like this. It gave him hope. Watch this, he said. It was that scene he loved. The one where Andy Dufresne arrives at the penitentiary and all the inmates are going mad, screaming at him, calling him and the rest of the newcomers fresh fish. I didn't think much of Andy the first time I laid eyes on him. That was Ryan's favourite line. He thought it was brilliant. I did too. Never judge a book by its cover, that's what that means. Never judge anybody, because you never know.
That's Michael McGee doing his own reading.
Chad, I'm just listening to him there, Matt. I don't think it is Michael McGee at all.
Because I was just going to say, that's a really good reading by somebody who could be an actor as well as an author.
No, sorry, I don't know where I got that from there now. I knew it was a Belfast accent. I was listening to interviews of Michael McGee talking about his book, and I'm after getting that confused. I'll tell you exactly now where I got that from. He did a great interview with Cullum Tobin there recently where he read out extracts of his book, and I was getting it mixed up between that and the audiobook. But nonetheless, it is a fantastic listen. Go listen to it and tell me what you think.
Favourite television shows? You like Say Nothing, which is the big one on Disney at the moment, based on the book by Patrick Radden Keefe.
Yeah, I thought that was a fantastic series. Have you seen it?
Not yet. I mean, I've read the book and I've interviewed Patrick Radden Keefe, but I still haven't got around to watching the TV series. Why would you recommend it to me?
Well, look, I think I had mentioned Say Nothing, and I also, two other series that I really
enjoyed. We'll get to them.
We'll get to them. Okay, good. Well, I mean, look, the thing about it was that I think it's really fascinating how people's lives are influenced by the community in which they're reared. And I think that, like, you know, a huge problem that we have at the minute is the kind of move away from the community and more like an emphasis on the individual, and you know, the maybe series that I'm drawn to are community, are, you know, where it kind of follows the stories of communities. And Say Nothing is very much a story of a community, in this case the Republican community in the north in the height of the Troubles, and I just really humanized the experience that, you know, these people had. And I mean, whatever your own political leanings would be, it's very hard.
As Gerry Adams has disowned this.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And so has Jean McConville's family. And so has, and of course, Marion Price has taken a case there as well. But I think, I mean, what I walked away from it is, you know, how your heart would break for people. You know, and the choices that people made, and the, you know, way that they felt like they needed to act. And I think that we can all benefit from giving a lot more empathy to
Well, let's hear a clip from Say Nothing. This is where the Price sisters enter Brixton Prison.
We'll ask you both to step out your clothes and place them in the bins. Miss Price.
Wait. Right now. We refuse to be held in a men's prison in London. We're two young women, and we should be in a women's prison.
You're convicted terrorists.
Not terrorists. We're prisoners of war, and we should serve out our sentence in a women's prison in Ireland. It's a political...
You see, that is our disagreement, Miss Price. There is no such thing as political explosions. There are just explosions, and the people who cause them end up here.
Yeah. And how many?
You're not entitled to any special treatment.
It's not special treatment for a woman to ask to be held in a women's facility.
You have 3 seconds, Miss Price.
No, no, we are formally requesting to be transferred to a women's prison in Ireland. Is anybody writing this down? My sister is 19 years old.
Yes, so are some of your victims.
Do you really want to start tallying up victims? Hey, no, wait! We'll do it.
Say Nothing. We have only about a minute and a half left, so tell us quickly about your two non-Irish TV choices.
Well, I picked The Wire and The Sopranos. So again, yeah, I mean, The Wire obviously set in Baltimore, and The Sopranos, the Irish, are the Italian-American community, so great watches.
In less than a minute, tell us about your buried treasure. Tell us about the Say a Song project.
The Say a Song project is a project that I worked on with a number of Irish writers and channel singers and contemporary visual artists, and the whole idea of it was to translate songs from the Shannos tradition and to open it up to the wider public, I suppose, because the songs are Os Gaeilge, and they're so old, people feel very intimidated by them. But the overriding message of the whole project was that we have an amazing tradition of oral literature in this country that often gets overlooked, and we can learn an awful lot about ourselves if we just take the time to look.
Dorán McLaughlin, it's been terrific meeting you. Thank you for joining us. Enjoy your trip to Canada and the United States with the How to Gael podcast, and I'm sure many more people will be listening to it.
The Last Word
with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.